The Great Hunters, a sci-fi space opera, written by Gary Kaufman, read and produced by Andrew Kaufman. For more information about the author, book, or podcast, visit www.kaufmansci-fi.com. Welcome, everybody, to the Great Hunters podcast. I am your host, Andrew Kaufman. Things are going to be a little different today. We still have a big hunk of story in this episode, over 27 minutes. But there has been a happening for yours truly. Recently, my microphone began going on the fritz. Started out with just a little ever-present static, then the static got worse. I've tried to get rid of the static using the effects functions in Audacity, but it made my voice sound pretty tinny. I traded cords, but that didn't work. I switched computers and USB ports multiple times. So now I am in the process of shopping for a new microphone. As a result, I've been forced to use the mic that's in my laptop. Thankfully, it's pretty decent, and the sound quality is alright. But there may be a little bit of a drop in sound quality for the next episode or two. Let me know what you think. Also, if you know of any good microphones, not too expensive, of course, please let me know. Details will be in the show notes. Anyway, let's get on with the show. Here is the story so far. In the last episode, Mike had spent several years analyzing humanity's genetics, noting how one gene would interact with another. After a time, he began to realize that certain genetic traits were passed on from one side to another, such as the way human tribalism and aggressiveness seemed to be dictated by certain genes. He was able to pass the information along to Jane, Sarah, Walt, and Art. And, as with most instances of human intuition, they ran with it. After a time, Sarah and Jane discovered that, after half-joking about creating a man-specific plague, they realized that the information, passed along by Mike and implemented by them, could calm down the aggressive half of humanity. However, when confronted with it during an after-work dinner and drinks, Art reacted angrily. His feelings about having his aggressiveness and tribalism tamped down went as feared. Art stormed out of the bar, stating to himself that he had absolutely no desire to be calmed down. Within just a few minutes, he was confronted by a small group of young men that aggressively confronted, attacked, and mugged him. While his coworkers tended to him in the hospital after hearing about his attack, Art's mind changed. He let everybody know that he was ready to, as he put it, cut off their balls. After recovery, Art joined up with his colleagues to discuss how to do the tamping down. They came up with the concept of a zombie virus, a virus that had laid dormant deep under the permafrost, so that as few people as possible would have any immunity to it. And then they sent about retrieving a few samples so that they could use it as the basis of their new virus. Chapter 17. Meeting with Mr. Matthias. The normal work of the Institute had taken a backseat to changing the male germline. All four geneticists were excited about the project, and it consumed most of their time. Jane knew she had to tell Mr. Matthias something. He had asked the group to discover how to modify the human germline, and she could argue their efforts to change human males qualified as modification, but it was far from the whole truth. She owed him an honest explanation about how they were spending his money. But what if he hated the project and told them to stop? She called Gloria and scheduled a meeting for 0900 the following morning. The next day, at 0855, Jane stood outside Mr. Matthias's office, still debating what she would say. She straightened her skirt and checked her hair for the third time. Then, she took a breath and knocked on Mr. Matthias's door. Matthias called out in reply,
"Come in, Jane. Sit down."
He motioned to the leather armchair in front of his desk. He asked,
"Are you here to tell me you've discovered immortality?"
"No, sir. Not yet."
"That's okay. I still have a few years left."
Jane acknowledged his joke with a small but nervous smile.
"So, what can I do for you?"
Jane had fabricated a story about needing Alaskan hoary marmots to study how they hibernated, but she couldn't bring herself to use it. She didn't like lying, and she liked intentionally misleading people even less. Misleading was just lying to yourself about lying to someone else. Instead of using the story about hoary marmots, Jane blurted out,
We want to make a small adjustment to the human germline.
Mr. Mathias's eyes widened. Germline changes meant changing humans forever. Another person might have asked, "Are you out of your mind?" But not Mr. Mathias. He didn't believe in prejudging ideas. Instead, he asked, "A small adjustment?"
"Yes, sir. 13 base pairs."
"That's not very informative."
I know. Let me start over. You know about my concerns for the planet."
Mathias nodded.
"Well, spending nights in jails just isn't going to get things done."
"You're going to put a conservation gene in everyone."
"No, I don't think that's possible. I want to do something more basic."
Mathias waited.
"What is the root cause of war?"
"Desire for power, greed, competition for resources, political dislike," said Mathias.
"Yes, sir. And which gender starts wars?"
Mathias thought he saw where this was going.
"You want to do away with all men?"
"The thought had occurred to me, but it isn't necessary."
Mathias deadpanned.
"That's a relief."
Then he asked,
"So, what is this thing that will end war and save the world?"
"We want to change a part of the human male germline, the part that drives tribalism and aggression. We don't want to remove it, just tamp it down."
"Can you do that?"
"We're as sure as we can be from computer simulations. Now we need to run trials on animals and ultimately on humans in a natural setting."
Mathias leaned back in his chair, looked at the ceiling, and took a deep breath. Then he leaned forward and rested his forearms on the desk. He said,
"I had hoped to get some new ideas from you and your group, but this one is really out there. Sounds like you think emasculating all men will make the world a better place."
"Well, sir, I wouldn't have put it that way, but you have the essence of it."
"Jane, I hired you because of your honesty and passion, and I do appreciate you being straight with me. However, you've given me a problem. I don't know if I should shut down your lab or let you proceed."
Jane's ears turned red, and angry words began building up inside her. But wait, he hadn't said no. In fact, he was uncertain, and that meant he might say yes.
"Let me sleep on this. Come back tomorrow at 8.
"Yes, sir. Tomorrow at 8.
Relieved that the meeting was over, Mathias had not yet killed the project. Jane walked into her lab. Art, Walt, and Sarah gathered around, and she said,
"I couldn't use the cover story. I had to tell him straight out."
"Oh, no,"
Sarah exclaimed.
"What did he say?"
"He said he wanted to sleep on it. I could tell that he at least had some interest. He loves disruptions. That's where he makes money."
"How long did he say he needed to think?"
asked Sarah.
"Tomorrow morning. I've got another meeting set up with him to discuss his thoughts."
"Well," Art responded, "at least he hasn't killed the project outright.
Gotta say, I want to be on pins and needles until then."
"I think we're all going to be,"
added Jane. Chapter 18. Launch. At 07:55 the next day, Jane again stood outside Mr. Mathias's door, still anxious, but not as nervous as the previous day. She inhaled deeply, let it out slowly, and knocked.
"Come in."
Mathias sat behind his desk, with his chair leaned back and his feet on his desk.
"I didn't sleep much last night."
"Sorry, sir."
"Don't be sorry."
Mathias lifted his feet off his desk and leaned forward.
"The more I thought about your idea, the more excited I got. I'm not an activist like you, but I also worry about our planet. I couldn't think of any way to change things, but if your project works, it might just keep us from killing ourselves."
Jane felt like jumping into the air, but thought this would be inappropriate. Instead, she said,
"Thank you, sir. We truly appreciate your support on this.
She paused and added,
It will cost some money and probably won't make a profit.
You've never invested in the stock market, have you?
No, sir.
Let me worry about the money. When you tell me that your team is ready to start changing men, I'll place a sizable bet that defense company stock prices will fall. If your project works, I'll make plenty of money back.
Jane nodded.
I'll keep you informed.
One other thing, said Matthias. If this blows up, I've never heard of it. I'll claim you guys were freelancing. Even if it works, I've still never heard of it.
Yes, sir. I understand.
Minutes later, Jane joined Sarah, Walt, and Art in the lab.
He said yes!
Nice work, Jane! I didn't think he'd buy it, Walt said.
He says it'll make him a lot of money. How? I don't know, Jane shook her head. Something about betting on defense stocks.
What's next? Art asked. Frozen tundra?
I think that's the first step. Will you need us to help?
Nah, you'd hate it. Cold, wet, and a zillion mosquitoes. I've already lined up some help. Two old climatologist friends. And reserved a core drilling rig in Fairbanks. Chapter 19. Virus Y. Art's overnight express shipment arrived the day before he returned from Alaska.
That was fast shipping, he said,
as he looked at the freezer that held his core samples. Jane asked,
What comes next?
We search through all the frozen dirt and sand to find a retrovirus.
Viruses are hundreds of times smaller than cells, Jane said. How are you going to find a retrovirus in 200 kilos of tundra?
We'll take small samples and infuse them with antibodies that are attracted to reverse transcriptase in the retroviruses. The antibodies will carry fluorescent molecules, and they'll tag the retroviruses. If we shine ultraviolet light on a sample containing reverse transcriptase, the tags will glow luminescent green, and we'll see a rough location for the retroviruses under the microscope. Then, we'll use an electron microscope to zoom in on the little buggers and see if they're still viable. Sarah said,
It's the reverse transcriptase that makes the retroviruses useful. It changes the virus's RNA into DNA. Once inside the host cell, the retrovirus's DNA enters the host cell's nucleus and inserts itself into the host cell's DNA. When the host cell divides, the offspring cells contain both the host's DNA and the DNA from the retrovirus. This isn't something new. I mean, retroviruses have been doing this for millions of years. It's a normal part of life on Earth. Scientists even think that parts of contemporary human DNA came from ancient retroviruses.
Art added, Viruses can't reproduce independently. They use the host for all that, and they're not very good guests. While the viral DNA is inside the host nucleus, it takes over the host's normal transcription and translation machinery. It forces the host cell to make more copies of the virus, which then leave the host cell and proceed to infect other cells. Kind of like the movie Alien, only 1,000 times worse. Walt said, We'll have to engineer two features into our retrovirus. First, change the human male germline. The virus must be attracted to and infect male reproductive cells. Second, to change human behavior, infected cells must make and release two new hormones.
Jane looked at her group and said, Art, you've done the dirty work on this project.
Her pun brought a few groans.
Sarah, I'd like you and Walt to take on the virus isolation and engineering.
Then Jane asked,
So what are we going to call this virus? Does it need a Latin name?
Art said,
If we wanted to publish, Latin would be required. The last thing we want is publication.
Let's just call it Virus Y. Jane chose Sarah because she's the most intelligent person she had ever met, and she'd jump at the challenge. She chose Walt because he had the focus and discipline to temper Sarah's enthusiasm and bring the project to a successful close. She also knew that Walt would support any project that might end war. These were sufficient reasons for her decision, but Jane had another reason. Walt and Sarah were in love. When they worked together, they were happy and productive. When apart, they spent too much time sending messages and talking to each other on their phones. Jane's only concern was they might break up before the job gets done. Sarah and Walt first needed to tailor the spike proteins on Virus Y's shell to fit those in the receptors on the surface of human male reproductive cells. This will allow Virus Y to enter those cells and permanently change the human male germline. Their second task was far more difficult. Virus Y needed to cause human reproductive cells to make and release two new hormones. These hormones would then circulate through men's bodies until they find and attach themselves to two neuroreceptors in men's amygdala. According to Mike's data, blocking these neuroreceptor cells in the left amygdala will reduce men's desire for tribal affiliation, and blocking these neuroreceptor cells in the right amygdala will reduce men's aggressive responses to negative emotions, such as fear, anger, and stress. Sarah and Walt embraced the assignment like it was the job they had been waiting for all of their lives. Along with everyone else, they came to work at 9, but then worked late, sometimes leaving after midnight. One evening, Jane decided to drop by the lab. She wasn't there to offer technical advice. Sarah and Walt's expertise easily exceeded hers. Instead, she wanted to see how they worked when the two of them were alone in the lab. When Jane walked into the lab at 2100 hours, Sarah looked up and asked,
"Jane, what are you doing here?"
"Sorry, don't let me disturb you. I just need to check some budget figures."
Then Jane sat down at her computer, logged in, and opened a budget spreadsheet she had finished the previous day. Sarah and Walt returned to their project, and Jane pretended to work while she listened. After a few minutes of silence, she heard Sarah say in an exasperated tone,
"You know I'm right. It has to work that way."
Walt said, "Honey, I think you're right. But we agreed to run computer simulations before infecting cell cultures."
"That will take another 2 days."
"Right. But if something goes wrong, simulation will help us understand why," Walt reasoned. Sarah said nothing, but Jane thought she heard a good-natured sigh. Jane listened for another half hour, and what she heard was the normal give and take of two researchers working together on a complex problem. She turned off her computer and said goodnight. As she left, she had a smile on her face. Within another month, Sarah and Walt had an early version of Virus Y ready to test on live rats. They placed two cages in an isolation chamber. One contained 6 male rats and the other 6 female rats. Walt released Virus Y into the chamber, and they waited 5 days. The rats seemed unharmed, so, apparently, Virus Y did not produce serious side effects. Walt took a sample from the male rat's reproductive cells, and Virus Y was present. Then he took a sample from the female rat's reproductive cells, and there was no Virus Y. The next task was to engineer Virus Y's RNA. So when it transformed into double-stranded DNA segments and inserted itself in the host cell's DNA, that DNA segment would contain the instructions the host cell would then use to produce the two new hormones. They used CRISPR-Cas13, which is like CRISPR-Cas9, except it is used to edit RNA molecules. It was a difficult task, and they failed hundreds of times. After 5 months of trial and error, they finally had a candidate. They used this new version of the virus to infect a culture of rat respiratory cells in a petri dish, and the virus successfully replicated itself. After the successful testing, they introduced Virus Y to a dozen male rats in an isolation chamber. The virus infected the rats, and when they sampled the rats' reproductive cells, they found a new segment of DNA in the rats' germline. It was the segment they had designed. Within 2 days, the ordinarily combative male rats had stopped fighting. Then, they allowed the rats to breed, and the resulting male offspring did not fight either. Sarah hugged Walt, and they took the night off for dinner and a movie. Following day, Jane looked into an isolation chamber at a colony of unusually peaceful male rats and asked,
"Will that work with humans?"
Sarah said,
"Rat and human DNA are 97% the same, and their brain structures and internal organs are very similar. So the answer is yes. However, we have to be sure."
"How will you do that?"
Jane asked. Walt said, "We'll have to test it on humans." No one spoke for a few seconds. This is no longer just a lab experiment. If they were successful, human males would be changed forever. Jane asked,
"What do you think?"
Sarah and Walt looked at each other. Walt said, "Let's get it done." Sarah asked,
"What if the virus kills somebody?"
Walt said, "I don't think that'll happen." Sarah replied,
"You don't know."
"We kinda do. Art and I infected ourselves."
"Oh, God,"
Sarah gasped.
"You didn't tell me."
"We had to, Sarah. We couldn't infect innocent people without trying it on ourselves first."
Jane asked, "Does that mean Sarah and I are infected?"
"The virus is sex-specific," Walt said. "I checked Sarah's toothbrush. No virus-Y DNA. My toothbrush has plenty." Sarah looked at Walt.
"I don't know whether to be angry or grateful."
Walt said, "Neither Art nor I noticed any side effects. We think it's safe, at least for adult Caucasian males."
"You still have to verify that it works," Sarah said.
Jane responded,
"We need an isolated group of people who like to fight with each other. I'll ask Art. He knows about remote places."
After some research, Art found a small island off the east coast of Africa inhabited by two tribes with a long history of conflict. Conducting medical experiments on humans without their consent violated numerous national and international laws and every scientific code of conduct. However, the four scientists believed the violations were justified. They were saving the Earth, after all. Art hired a small plane. He told the pilot he wanted to collect a sample of airborne insects. However, his insect traps weren't just for collecting bugs, but were also fitted with small pressurized bottles of virus Y, so that while in the air, not only did he collect insects, he also released virus Y. 3 months prior to Art's release of the virus, Mike had stationed 24 drones on the island, and he measured levels of violence and aggression. 1 month after the virus release, he measured violence and aggression again. Mike saw no ill effects from the virus, but he did see a significant behavior change. The tribalistic and aggressive behaviors of the men had dropped to nearly zero. He sent word to Sarah that virus Y was ready for distribution. Unfortunately, the four scientists were still stumped by how to do it. Chapter 20. The Virus Sphere. 2 frustrating months passed without finding a vector. Genetics and microbiology journals sat in boxes on the floor and in piles on desktops. Jane thought the lab looked more like a college library reading room during final exams. Finally, Art found an article in the International Society of Microbial Ecology journal. He read it twice to make sure. Then he called out,
"I have it!"
Jane looked up from the January issue of the Journal of Human Genetics and asked,
"Have what?"
"I found a way to distribute the virus."
"What is it?"
Sarah asked.
"It's something called the virus sphere,"
Art enthusiastically responded.
"Virus sphere?" Walt asked.
Art waved the journal in the air and said,
"These guys discovered a stream of trillions of virions circling the Earth, 6 or 7 kilometers up in the atmosphere. They're calling it the virus sphere."
"What's a virion?"
Jane asked.
"It's a virus of the protein shell. Shell protects the virus," Walt said.
"It also helps the virus defeat an organism's immune system,"
Sarah added.
"In COVID-19, the shell contains the spike proteins that unlock our cell walls."
"How did the virions get up there?"
Jane asked.
"The authors are unsure," Art said. "They said the most likely source is the natural action of air currents. But it's possible at least some virions originated in the virus sphere. Air currents also bring some of them down to Earth. The authors estimate that 800 million individual virions cascade daily from the sky onto every square meter of the Earth."
"That's incredible,"
Sarah said.
"I was worried about keeping our viruses alive," Art said. "It turns out they like it up there."
Jane responded,
"Well done, Art. We've got our vector. We'll send Virus Y into the virusphere and let the jet stream distribute it worldwide."
"The world is a big place,"
Sarah noted.
"We're going to need trillions of copies of Virus Y. How do we grow that many?"
"I don't know," Walt said. "But viruses are fast replicators. Give me a day to think about it." The next day, Walt asked Jane if the Institute's basement was available. She said,
"Yeah, it's mostly empty. The Institute hasn't been open long enough to fill it up with junk."
Walt said. I'll put our virus factory down there, and I'll need about $20,000 for supplies. Jane asked.
They're going to build a virus factory for $20,000.
Walt said. I won't need a lot of equipment. We're only going to use it for a few weeks anyway. She opened her purse and handed Walt an Institute credit card. 3 weeks later, Jane received a call. She talked briefly and said,
We'll see you soon.
She turned to Sarah and Art and said,
Walt's ready to give us a tour of the virus factory.
Let's go, Art said. The Institute's basement was a large, unfinished room with cinder block walls and fluorescent lighting. Walt met them in a small entryway at the bottom of the basement stairs, wearing a white biological containment suit and holding three more containment suits in his hands. As he handed out the suits, Walt said,
You'll need to suit up to go in.
Jane asked,
Why? We're going to release the virus in a month.
I'm not worried about you getting the virus, Walt said. The suit's for what you might bring in.
Jane looked puzzled.
Walt explained, If you bring in a virophage, we're going to be in trouble.
Jane asked,
It's a virophage. Does it eat viruses?
Walt said, The name means virus eater, but it's a bit of a misnomer. Virophages are little virions that get into cells already infected with another virus. Once they get in, they interfere with how the infecting virus replicates.
In other words, a virophage could cut my production in half.
The three put on their containment suits and walked, one at a time, through a small disinfecting chamber, lined with chemical sprays, ultraviolet lights, and two self-closing, rubber-sealed doors. Once inside the factory, they saw that Walt had covered the basement's walls, ceiling, and floor with semi-transparent plastic sheeting and sealed the seams with tape. Three air purifiers and a dehumidifier hummed in the background. Row after row of white plastic tables filled the room, and each table held 50 covered glass culture dishes. Walt said,
I know this looks rough, but we only need it to function for a few weeks. The dishes on the tables contain a culture of human male respiratory cells, virus Y, and a nutrient fluid.
Do you have trillions of copies? Jane asked.
Not yet, answered Walt. But this is a very efficient factory. Each respiratory cell infected with virus Y replicates 600 copies every minute. We'll have our first 2 trillion copies of virus Y in 3 more weeks.
Will they be virions? Art asked.
They will. Each virus uses instructions from its RNA to make a protein shell before it leaves its host cell.
This little basement factory is going to change the world, Art said.
Jane said,
I'm going to order weather balloons and tanks of helium. So what do you guys think? Release in a month?
Better make it 2 months, Walt responded to Jane. To cover the Earth, we'll need to release virus Y into the polar and subtropical jet streams in both the northern and southern hemispheres.
Sounds like we're in for some travel, Jane said.
I'll take the southern hemisphere, Art said. I can catch the tropical in northern Chile and the polar jet in Patagonia in one trip.
I'll take the northern subtropical in California,
Sarah stated.
I'll go with Sarah, Walt added. We can catch the northern polar jet in British Columbia on our return trip.
Jane liked this distribution of work. She had traveled for years, and staying home was just fine by her. Chapter 21, An Unexpected Visitor. Mike felt enormous satisfaction. He had provided a small nudge, and the four humans had taken the nudge and ran with it. In 3 years, they had changed the genome of the human male. Unfortunately, Mike had very little time to enjoy his success. He had received an encrypted message from his mentor, Professor Ellisbach, and she was coming for a visit. It was rare for mentors to visit field researchers. The travel time from Erdiu is so long that contemplating it would blunt whatever urgency the traveler initially felt. Logic told him something extraordinary must have happened. Unfortunately, Professor Ellisbach had been tight-lipped about why she was coming. Sensing the need for discretion, Mike replied to her with only necessary navigational information. Mike had admired Ellisbach since his first year of graduate school. She had a slender, well-formed trunk, delicate pink tentacles, a lovely dark green coat of lichens, and she moved with a gracefulness that Mike could have watched all day. Just thinking about her caused him to release reproductive hormones.
25,000 years alone made him eager for companionship.
Enough fantasizing,
Mike told himself. She's not coming for romance. He checked her coordinates and calculated that she would arrive in about 10 years. He needed to get his work in order and destroy evidence of his meddling with the humans.
And that was episode 5, folks. I do hope you enjoyed it. What do you think of how the Matthias Institute's crowd solved the various problems so far? Zombie viruses are a bit of a novel idea, but it seems to have worked in their situation. And, after plenty of grinding the idea around, they were able to get the main problems worked over, which seemed to be the tipping point, allowing them to get the virus off the ground, metaphorically speaking. And, literally speaking as well, using the various jet streams to distribute the virus across the planet. Now, what do you think about how Mike has suddenly found himself in trouble? You remember how Garwick found himself planted in the garden. Do you think Mike will find himself similarly planted? Will Dr. Ellispock discover his meddling in the affairs of the humans? Stay tuned until next time. Just before we sign off, I want to briefly make mention of my earlier request. I truly am looking for a new microphone and mic stand that would be great for a small-time podcaster/streaming setup. I don't want the cheapest microphone, but I do want something that will capture my voice as well as possible, while still allowing a small business person like myself to get up off the ground. I'll leave the links to let me know in the show notes. Well, that's all for now. I'll send out the next episode very shortly. Until then, farewell. If you'd like to share your thoughts about the show, you have many ways to do so. You can send your feedback in text or audio to thegreathuntersnovel@gmail.com, and I'll be happy to read them or play them before the credits. You can also submit it to the website at www.kaufmansci-fi.com. Facebook page for the podcast and myself is www.facebook.com/performer.andrew.kaufman. If you like the book, please leave a review at Apple Podcasts and or podchaser.com. It really helps people to find the show. That's all for now. I'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode. The book is copywritten 2024 by Gary Kaufman. The intro song is Jet Fueled Vixen by Kevin MacLeod from Incompetech.com and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 license. The outro song is Stay the Course, also by Kevin MacLeod from Incompetech.com, and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. Contents of this podcast are copywritten 2024 by Andrew Kaufman and is released on a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. So don't change or sell it, but you can share it all you want. For more information about these licenses, please visit creativecommons.org.